Jim, just want to thank you for this weekend. I mean, this is something I've been looking forward to since mid-March last year, so thank you for putting this on, too, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak a little bit as well. So just right off the bat, love to share with you a little bit about my life, my testimony, but I want to make it clear from the outset, who is this story about? It's about God. It's not about me. So I know it's easy. I've heard a lot of people tell their testimonies, and my response at the end is, wow, that's amazing. That's an awesome story. Your life's incredible. And I have to take a step back and say, not the point. I missed the whole point of it. The point is to see the working of God throughout that. So just at the outset, I just want to make that clear. This is a story about God, not about me at all. So a little bit about my background. I'm actually from Los Angeles originally, was raised in Western Massachusetts. And the reason I think that has a broader implication on my life, both of those are very liberal, very anti-Christian areas. And I don't mean liberal from a political worldview necessarily, but very anti-Christian. So my parents, my mother is what she would consider ethnically Christian. What I mean by that is she does not believe in God, but that's how she was raised. So Easter, Christmas, those were just things that she did. Had no part in terms of who she actually was. That was just a little bit of her history. My dad's actually Jewish, and he would say the same thing my mom would say. He is ethnically Jewish. So to give you an example of what that means, we'd celebrate Hanukkah, we'd celebrate Passover, but how those would actually come about is we'd come home from school one day, and my dad would say, you know, we forgot the first six nights of Hanukkah, let's do 7 and 8. So it was kind of that half-hearted, we were trying, didn't really work. For the Passover, we had a one-page cheat sheet on this is how to do the Passover. So just to give you an idea, that's sort of what I was raised with. Western Massachusetts as well, wonderful place to grow up, not very set on following Jesus, just as a culture. It would fall into what I consider two categories of religion. Number one's pluralism, if you guys have heard of that. The other one is moralistic therapeutic deism, and not to throw out a complicated word, but what that basically means is it's the idea that, you know, God created the world. He wants us to be good, but he's kind of taken a step back. He's a bit removed from the situation. He has no bearing on what we do in our daily lives. So a lot of what I was raised with just in that culture and in my family was more or less be a good person. That definition, again, was variable depending on who you talk to. A large part of that was just be kind to others. And I would get a little bit deeper and I would just say be tolerant of others, except for those who aren't tolerant of certain people because of truth they believe. So it was a mindset where we would act like we were Christians. The culture would say they were Christians. But if you were a Christian and you stood for something that you said was truth, you'd get shot down and you'd really get humiliated. So that was kind of the culture that I grew up in, very anti-Christian. My family as well, even today, give you a little bit of a spoiler, nobody in my family is a Christian. But again, that was sort of the culture that I was raised with. Wonderful, wonderful parents. They raised me, I'd like to think, in a pretty good fashion, just not necessarily with Christian values. As far back as I can remember, though, I always believed in God. And I couldn't put Jesus to that. I couldn't really place him there. But it always made sense that there was some higher being. It always made sense that there was something that we were supposed to do with our lives, as opposed to just living it on our own. So what sort of got me on the path of following Jesus, number one, was his sovereignty. There's a passage in John 6 where God basically talks about drawing people unto Jesus. And I think that's an absolutely beautiful passage. The way that came about in my life, I had one Christian friend when I was growing up. And on the bus one day, he was reading the Left Behind books. I don't know if anyone's read those books. Now, since then, my eschatology has changed a little bit. But at the time, he gave me the book to read. Really, it's a novel that kind of captures your attention. And I remember reading this, again, having no idea who Jesus was. And my first thought was, this is absolutely terrifying. How do we avoid this? So that sort of started me down a rabbit hole where I was figuring out, I had this idea of God. I read this book and I knew that being on the wrong side of this would not end well for me. And then the question came about, well, what do I do at that point in time? So that was about 7th or 8th grade. And it really set me down this path where I wanted to pursue God, whatever that meant, but I had nobody to guide me in the midst of that. So in the midst of my schooling as well, and this becomes relevant a little bit later on, I was always a bright kid in elementary school and middle school. And in about 7th grade, my grades started really taking a dive. And I entered a really, really deep depression. So my father's actually a psychiatrist, so it was something that he was very aware of. He was working with me through it. But I was getting very, very frustrated in school. There's also a verse in Ephesians 2. It's either verse 11 or 12, but it's after the passage everyone knows by heart, where it talks about without Jesus having no hope. And I can tell you firsthand exactly what that means. And so in ninth grade, I started going to Young Life, which I know is pretty big out here. I'm guessing most of you are familiar with it. And so that was the first time in my life I'd ever heard somebody equate Jesus with God, and here's what it means to actually follow him and to actually call yourself a Christian. It's not just being nice to people on the street. There's a little bit more to it than that. So in the midst of all of that, again, I was going through this really, really bad depression, and it's really hard to explain what that feels like, but again, just that verse in Ephesians 2, it is having absolutely no hope. So there's one night in October of 2004. Again, my father being a psychiatrist, and I don't fault him for this, so if you get that from the story, that's not my point at all. We had a lot of medications around our house, just because he was able to write scripts and variety of reasons. We had a lot of medications. It had never been an issue with any of us kids. So one night in October, I was about to drop out of high school. I was really fed up with just everything in life. And again, really kind of starting to figure out who is Jesus, who is God. And I had this one thought this night that this world is very sad. It is very depressing. We're talking about, I know we left that all at the door, but it's not a world that I looked at the time and said, this is great. I'd love to be here for 80 or 90 years. So my thought without really understanding Christianity at that time was, well, if you die, you go to heaven. That solves all the problems. We get to kind of skip these 70 years of unhappiness and get right to heaven. So there's one night where nobody in my family was home. I was really fed up. Again, I had absolutely no hope in the world. And I went into the bathroom and I chose just one of the prescriptions randomly out of the medicine cabinet. And I swallowed about 60 or 70 pills. And I went back to my bed and I lied down in the dark and I just cried. And that's one of the most vivid memories I have, is just going back with no hope and just crying. Fast forward a year later, and this is where it's really awesome to see the sovereignty of God at work throughout that. Again, we had, my guess would be 50 or 60 different prescriptions in our house that I could have drawn from. And is anyone here a physician? Okay. So if I'm butchering the science behind this, please let me know. So I took the one pill I took, and I found this out about a year later. My dad told me to take a couple of them for something unrelated, and my first thought was, well, isn't that too many? And he explained the science of it in about 10 seconds, but basically what he said was, this is one of the few prescriptions that is virtually impossible to overdose on. Your body will absorb as much as it needs, and it'll just ignore the rest, and it'll leave your system. And when he told me that, my first thought was, you've got to be kidding me. I could have chosen 50 or 60 different pills, and the one I took is the one that couldn't kill me. Which I look back at and say, God was clearly at work in terms of making sure that there's a verse in Genesis 50, verse 20, after Joseph goes through a pretty bad ordeal, God says, you know, what they meant for evil, I meant for good. And that's just the best picture of the sovereignty of God you're going to get. So going through Young Life, a guy named Dave Winch was the first guy to really approach me and really seek me out to say, hey, you're trying to figure out this path. Can I lead you on that path? And I'm really big on discipleship. I'll give a little plug for it here in a second. But one of the things I find so awesome, there's a chapter in, where's Marty? Is it Acts 8, the eunuch? We just went over it in church. I think it's Acts 8.
Yes.
Yeah, so with the eunuch, you see this eunuch who God clearly was drawing him unto Jesus. And when Philip approaches him on the road and he finds him reading Isaiah, he says, do you understand what you're reading? What does the eunuch say? How can I unless someone shows me? So that was kind of the spot I was at, is God was leading me, and I was saying, well, how do I do this? So this guy named Dave really was very intentional about entering my life and discipling me and showing me, you know, here's the path you need to follow. So we met on a weekly basis, and my dad bought me one of the Zondervan NIV study Bibles, and I would read it. I'd write out probably 30 or 40 questions. I'd meet with Dave at a diner, and we'd go through them one by one. And what I love about that is, 1 Corinthians 13, we all know the passage on love. Do you know the first two characteristics of love? Love is patient, love is kind. I saw that exemplified in this man, where you've got an arrogant little 14-year-old who thinks he's the greatest thing in the world, and you've got a guy who's willing to be intentional, seek me out, and say, I will walk with you every step of the way. Whatever time you need, I'll take. And he had the confidence that it was God causing the growth and not him. And so that's something where It's a verse in Hebrews 13, verse 7. It says, "Remember those who led you, who spoke the word of God to you, and considering the result of their conduct, imitate their faith." And this was the first person I'd had in my life who put a label on it and said, "I'm following Jesus." And without me even having to really look deeply, I would say, his life adds up. It makes sense. Can you teach me how to do this? So he really walked with me throughout my entire high school life. And again, when I mentioned the patience and kindness, he was with me in a time when many people abandoned me. My parents stuck with me through everything, but I actually dropped out of high school twice. And he, again, was with me every single step of the way, knowing that his job was to show me the truth of Scripture. His job was to walk with me through it, and his job was to be patient and kind, and he did that to a T. So in terms of coming out here to Colorado, Colorado is a very random place for a kid from Western Massachusetts to end up. And again, I would just put this right in the sovereignty of God category. So I was actually looking at CSU because of the vet school. I had the second top, or I think the second rated vet school in the country at the time. And so I came out here. And pretty cool story, again, in retrospect. I was with my orientation group in July before my freshman year, and I was walking across campus, and for some reason, I had to go away from my group to sign up for something or do something on my own. So as I was walking across campus one day, I ran across one of the campus ministers for a church at the CSU campus. And again, it was just me and him on the plaza, so it's hard to avoid somebody like that when you're the only two people out in open space. And so he kind of talked to me a little about Christianity, about the church, about their vision for it. And he said, you know, "Can I call you when school starts?" And I said, "Of course you can." I didn't actually think he would, but he called me the first week of school. And for about 6 years, we met on a weekly basis. And same thing as I saw in Dave, somebody who's willing to be intentional, be patient with me, and really show me the truth throughout that. So one of the reasons I'm so big on discipleship and so thankful for what you've done, and also Dave, Ansel, George, wherever you are too, just getting to be with you guys on Tuesday morning. This is a plug for everyone in the room. What I get to see when I meet with you guys is people who have been Christians for 40, 50, 60 years. And I get to see the faith, and I get to see the result of that faith. And I get to say, that's something I want to imitate. So just as a plug for discipleship, I can't even tell you the impact that has had on my life. Not that it was just a bunch of Christians I found at church, but it was somebody who was willing to actually seek me out and to say, I'm going to sacrifice of my time to meet with you to show you the way. Again, the growth was not his responsibility, but his responsibility was being a presence and showing me the truth. So that was just something that I really cannot express how grateful I am for Dave's discipleship and also all of you guys that I get to meet with weekly too. There's one verse I want to read. This is two verses, actually. Psalm 126, verses 5 and 6. And just to give you a little bit of background, about 2 years ago, I met with Dave. I hadn't seen him for about 2 years. And we were just kind of sitting there in the diner like we always had. And he starts crying. And I said, "Well, what are you crying about?" And he shows me this verse. And the verses go, "Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bringing the sheaves with him." What I find so incredible about that and what he explained, he had been doing Young Life for about 45 years. And he said that, including me, there were three people total who he had gotten to see the fruit of his labor by the grace of God. He had been there to plant the seed, and he had been there to walk with myself and two other people to see the fruit of that. And he was telling me, over 45 years, there are some days where I wake up and I say, "Lord, am I actually doing anything for the kingdom?" And he said, "By the grace of God, I've gotten to see the fruit in your life." And I kind of took a step back and I said, "You know, Dave, if I were the only person that your ministry helped, that would be worth it for me." So again, I just want to encourage everyone, even if it's just one guy you're reaching out to, from my standpoint, even I think, "Oh gosh, it's just one guy." But to think of the people in my life who invested in me just because I was a guy, I mean, that's such a testimony to the call of discipleship I think we are called to, if that makes sense. So the one thing I want to leave you with for my testimony, again, number one, the story is, this is God's story. This is not my story. I know I'm a lot of times tempted to look at people and look at their situation and sort of judge very prematurely what God is or is not going to do in their life. So a lot of my friends were raised in Christian homes. They've known Jesus as far back as they can remember. And a lot of them ask me, "Well, are you sad that you didn't grow up in a Christian home?" And that's all I knew, so I can't really say one way or another. The hope I do have, though, is when I meet people who are not surrounded by Christians, but I might be the only voice in their life, I can tell from my own testimony that God will have a way to draw them unto himself. But by the beauty of the gospel and what we're called into is we can be part of that journey. So just to encourage everyone, if there's somebody you know that you're thinking, my goodness, how are they going to hear the gospel? Or you're meeting someone and they're in a deep depression and you're thinking, my goodness, how are they going to be saved with that? I'm a testimony of what God can do from that. So just to give hope, as I said in Ephesians 2, there's that verse of we are without hope in Jesus. The next verse says, but then we have hope from him. So that's the hope I want to be sure we cling to. And as Paul said with his testimony, God saved him, he said, so that everyone would know that nobody is too far off for God to pull them unto him. And that's what I hope with my testimony we can look at to say, if people don't have Christian influences around them, God can still be working on them. God can still be softening their heart. He can still be calling them unto himself. The responsibility we have is discipleship. So I just want to, again, plug that one more time, that I think that is what we are called to. And just even if you invest in one guy, as Jim said, if there's one guy here that you meet with, that's really all it takes. For me, it was somebody saying, there's one guy, let me meet with him. That's really all it took. So thank you, guys.